morning. Well, it looks like I've got a pretty tall order to fill following a Texas cotton producer and two cotton specialists, but I'll do the best that I can. My name is Bob Griffin, and I'm an independent crop consultant from Jonesboro, Arkansas. Well, I'm sure this isn't the first time that you've heard, and I guess you've noticed how the commodity prices were very volatile this last year. This is a graph. I just really wanted to show the variability here. This is December 09 cotton for this last year. It started out the year at about 80 cents a pound. In March, went up over $1 a pound. In December, declined down to about 45 cents a pound. This is September corn for 09. Started out the year at about $4 a bushel. This graph actually starts in March, but in January it was at $4, went up to almost $8 a bushel, and in December declined back down to about $3.50 a bushel. This is November soybeans, which started the year at about $10.50 a bushel. In July went up to about $16 a bushel, almost $16, and then in December declined back down to about $8 a bushel. Well, with these great price fluctuations, I really don't know of many producers that know exactly how many acres of whichever crop they're going to grow this year. Yesterday when I checked, December 09 cotton was at 56 cents a pound, which is approximately 10 cents more than it was a month ago. But unless something dramatic changes in the cotton industry, this is what I foresee in the near future. Okay, in my area of Arkansas, this is what we're seeing now, a change of landscape. If you'll notice in the bottom right of this picture or whatever, mostly soybeans, a lot more corn, a little bit more milo or grain sorghum, and definitely less cotton. What does this mean to me as a consultant? Well, I'll start out with insect interactions. First of all, with soybeans, the main problem is stink bugs. We have migration sometimes of these stink bugs into our cotton fields. It hadn't been a tremendous problem for me, but when these stink bugs do migrate over into the cotton field at certain times of the year, they can definitely be injurious to the cotton. With plant bugs, we're dealing mostly with corn and milo, and they can be a severe problem, especially with the corn from the early silking through mid-maturity. With milo, it starts a little bit later and continues a little bit later in the year. But these plant bugs are mainly tarnished plant bugs, Lygus linearis, and they've definitely been a big problem during the last couple of years. Okay, you can see this cotton field that was planted next to a corn field. You can see that the plant bugs next to the turn road right across from the corn field almost decimated the edge of this cotton field. And these were definitely plant bugs that did this. You don't want this to happen. Okay, with weed management, we can actually improve weed management by rotating to other crops. Anybody seen any of these before? This is my worst nightmare, these resistant Palmer amaranth or pigweeds. And actually, when we rotate into soybeans, we can use the option of a couple of products. We have Reflex that we can use pre-plant, and then we have FlexStar that we can use in season, and both of these are pretty good products on these resistant pigweeds. Whereas with corn and milo, we have the opportunity to use atrazine or trizanes that others have mentioned, and those are pretty good. That's a pretty good product also on these resistant pigweeds. Fertility management with rotational crops is one aspect of the rotation that I think many producers are overlooking. If you'll notice on this graph, the last couple of years, all I really want to point out, this is an index and not actual prices, but you can see that mainly nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium prices, and I'm sure this is no surprise to anyone, has tremendously gone up during the last couple of years. And even though nitrogen has gone down substantially during the last month or two, phosphorus and potassium prices are still 2 to 3 times what they were just a couple of years ago. My main point here is that I don't think we can afford to continue putting out fertilizer whether we need it or not. We must be willing to adapt new technology that allows us to just place fertilizer where it's needed and in optimum rates. And this new technology can allow us to do that. We don't want to get stuck in a rut doing the same thing over and over anymore. We can't just continue doing things just because, you know, grandpa or dad did it. With soybeans, when we rotate into soybeans, I found that there's very little additional nitrogen needed. There's less of a demand for phosphorus and potassium, but we can decrease P and K levels, or phosphorus and potassium, to levels that are not acceptable for corn or cotton when we grow them there the next year. So the only way we know that, I thought I was the only one, Robert, but I think that you really need to soil test these fields when you change into these rotational crops each year. You don't need to wait. The only way you're going to know what's happening after rotating to a new crop is to soil test. With corn, we found that we need extra nitrogen for maximum economical yields. We also have more of a demand for both phosphorus and potassium, but this can increase our phosphorus and potassium levels for the next year that may allow for reduction in needs for following crops. So if you rotate it into corn for a year or two, you may find that you don't have to use as much fertilizer on your cotton as you used to have to. Okay, I would venture to say that most people that up until just a few years ago, most people have only sampled their soils every 3 or 4 years, or maybe less frequently than that. And most of these samples were done as composite samples. When I say a composite sample, I'm speaking of a sample every 20 to 40 acres. If you'll notice in this field, I pulled two samples. This was in 2005. Pulled two samples in this is a 40 acre field, so one sample per 20 acres. At that time, that was, you know, pretty good sampling procedure. These numbers you'll notice, I don't know if you can see them or not. I think the numbers on the phosphorus levels on the left are about 130 and 44, something like that. But anyway, they're tremendously different. Potassium levels are 281 on the left, 181 on the right, and there's no way in the world you'd know what to do in this field. I think we can do better than that. I think we can improve on these sampling techniques. I'd like to introduce to you what I call smart sampling. Smart sampling is a method simply of directing samples in a predetermined manner. There we go. I was scared there. Sample site locations can be chosen based upon several criteria. Known areas of low yield, high yield, poor drainage, or soil texture can be chosen to base your direction of the samples. We can use various zone maps, which I'm sure many of you have heard of, aerial imagery, yield maps, and grid soil sample maps can also be used. So there's a multitude of things that we can do to decide where we're going to pull the samples in the field, and not just go out there and pull one or two samples in a field and make our fertility recommendations based upon that. Okay, aerial imagery allows us to produce these zones that you see in the bottom left-hand corner. And I'll just tell you, I'm sure many of you know about the NDVI images, the aerial images, but the blue zones simply represent normally where we have a good crop or have more vegetation, shows where the crop's growing well. Whereas the green and the yellow zones are mediocre, and the red zones are showing problem areas in the field. Well, they don't always represent the same thing. They have to be ground checked, but they can tell us where we have problem areas. Aerial imagery can be a useful tool by revealing differences in fields otherwise overlooked. We cannot assume, this is one problem with it, but it's all right. We cannot assume that zone colors always represent the same differences. Zones can represent many things, such as drainage problems, fertility levels, disease, and insect damage, etc. Aerial imagery can readily pinpoint problem areas and fields, and this is the most important thing. The biggest benefit of aerial imagery is allowing us to discern problem areas of fields so that we may sample these areas and address the problem. Then, after identifying the problem, then we can often use the aerial imagery to create a variable rate map and then to apply products at rates that are best suited to each area of the field and not apply the same rate over the whole field. Okay, this is the same field that I showed just a minute ago at the top. It's showing these greatly different numbers. If you'll notice on the bottom, what I did was is I used an aerial imagery map, and then I placed the points, just directed the location of the points where I'd represent these zones with my soil samples. I don't know if you can read these numbers, but you can see from the color, if nothing else, that this gave us a great better depiction of what was going on in the field. I can tell you that on the left-hand side on the phosphorus, whereas before it was 100 and something, it ranges from, I think, 72 to like 180 anyway. It gives us a great better depiction of what's going on in the field on both the phosphorus and the potassium. This is a 75-acre field that I grid soil sampled every 2.5 acres. My point is that if I composite sampled this field, I would have only pulled 4 samples. This map is oriented north and south, and these rows run north and south, so if you can picture, I would have pulled 4 composite samples out here. And if you'll notice, in the top, in the northeast corner of this field, and a couple of spots in the middle of the field, are the only locations where the phosphorus levels are low. But this could have definitely been mixed with the other samples in this area, could have caused us to put out phosphorus over 3/4 of this field. Whereas by using the grid sampling technique, I was able to just put out phosphorus on 3 acres out of this 75-acre field. And we didn't receive yield reduction from doing that. Okay, this is potassium levels in the same field. Basically the same scenario. Top right or northeast corner of the field was the only place that we really had low levels of potassium. There's one other spot, if you'll notice in the middle towards the left, down towards the bottom, was a lower area. But that could have easily caused us, I found, to put out fertilizer or potassium over 3/4 of the field. We actually applied potassium to 5 acres out of 75 acres. Thing I want to get across is this. I found last year on several fields that we were able to reduce just P and K applications by $100 an acre. That's substantial savings in my opinion. And we didn't reduce yields, and in many instances we actually increased yields. Okay, I had an idea a couple of years ago. I wanted to see if we could use this aerial imagery when I first started using it to identify cut areas in fields. We have several fields that have recently been leveled, and you just have to take my word for it. I can show you more information later. But these red zones in this particular field definitely depicted the cut areas. And I don't know if you can read it or not, but on the analysis, the organic matter in this cut area, this one sample, was 0.3%. And I found this to be uniform over all these cut areas. Same field in a blue area, which represented where the field dirt was put, or a lot less cuts, 0.8%. That's 2.5 times the organic matter that we found in the cut area. Well, what we've done with this is these aerial imagery maps have allowed us to identify these cut areas and then variable rate gin trash over these areas to alleviate the problem. Okay, this is that same field again that I showed earlier, and I just wanted to show you, I can read these numbers a little bit better. The blue zone in the center, you can see the numbers basically go from 250, this is potassium, of course, potassium and pounds per acre. All my levels that I've shown you are pounds per acre. These potassium levels range from 250 to basically 350, shows 340 here. The red areas are showing from 100 to 150, and the green areas are basically showing between 150 to 200. In summary, I think that it's important that we do these things. Considering landscape management, the best way to avoid problems with soybeans and corn and milo next to cotton is don't plant them next to cotton. That's not always possible, I realize that, but the best way to do it, if you can't not plant them by cotton, is to definitely scout the borders of these fields, the edges of these fields, wherever we're adjacent to these problem crops, especially corn and milo. And if we get into action thresholds of these insects, when we see this migration, then take action. We need to utilize rotational crops to control weeds that are not easily controlled in cotton, such as Palmer pigweed and possibly mare's tail. And then the most important thing in my opinion is we need to soil test thoroughly to allow for the usage of fertilizer only where necessary. Don't put it out if it's not needed, and only in the amount needed for maximum economical yields. We can save money and make the same or better crops. We need to soil test each year after rotating to a new crop. Well, that's about all I have, except for I hope y'all produce a lot of cotton that looks like this year, and I appreciate the opportunity for speaking to you here at the Beltwide Cotton Conference.
Thank you. We just have a moment. Does anyone have another point you'd like to magnify or something you'd like to underline before we're done?
Just very briefly, Jimmy, I think looking at Charlie's data with regard to how those rotation, those long-term rotations were affecting soil organic matter, you know, from a moisture holding capacity and from a nutrient holding capacity, that's outstanding, because that's going to mean a lot to you, especially in dry years. And as we look to reducing fertility and saving a little money here and there, that makes up for that. So that's another extremely valuable benefit of rotation. So that's good data, Charlie.
Anyone else? One point I'd like to just underline is be sure you read your labels. When you start in a new crop and you start applying chemistries that you may not be familiar with, carryover can come up and bite you. And so be sure that you're a good steward of those labels and make sure you get the right chemistry applied and think out 12 months to 24 months ahead of time and what the effect of that is going to be. Thank you. This concludes our panel.